week of great pain, mixed as always with great joy. Yesterday afternoon in this room, I married a wonderful couple who will be very important in the life of this church. There is a kind of emotional roller coaster always in what Gary and I try to do, but we also have a job, and I have a sermon to preach, and so I'm going to try to block out the pain and preach the sermon, and at the end of it, I will tell you a little bit more about Patrick. The sermon title may look familiar to you if you happen to notice it, because it was announced in the last century, but we had a squirrel-induced power failure one Sunday, and then we had a snow cancellation, and so this sermon has been held up. Somebody said it's possible that the victim of that disease died in the meantime, don't you think? But he's fictional, and he survives immortally. There is a moment in one of Shakespeare's plays when that marvelously funny fat man, Sir John Falstaff, has a conversation with the Chief Justice of England. Sir John is not comfortable with a man of law, because his rowdy, roistering lifestyle will not bear close scrutiny, so he pretends not to hear some of the questions aimed at him by the Chief Justice. When he is rebuked for that, he makes a facetious remark that turns out to be true in a way of a lot of us. He says to the Chief Justice, "It is the disease of not listening that I am troubled withal." Falstaff's ears were healthy enough. His problem was not physical, but mental. He heard only what it pleased him to hear, what we call selective hearing. Or perhaps selective listening would be more accurate, because we all hear sounds when we are not really listening at all. Listening, really listening, is more than awareness of noise. It involves a conscious act of will as one engages the mind and enters into unspoken dialogue with the speaker, the kind of hearing Jesus had in mind when he said, "If you have ears, use them." He was frustrated, as every passionate teacher often is, by people whose ears register noise which their minds never translate. Perhaps deliberately, because like Falstaff, if they really listened, they would have to respond, and response might be inconvenient. When young children were leaving home before sunrise and dragging back home after dark daily in 19th century English factories and coal mines, Elizabeth Barrett Browning protested in a long poem that began, "Do you hear the children weeping, O my brothers?" Well, many of the owners did not hear them. They could hear clearly a threat to their privileges and the clink of half crowns on their countertops, but they had closed their ears to the cries of the children. They had contracted the disease of selective hearing. It's a common disease among our own children, either because they are innocently lost in daydreams or because they've learned how useful it can be to listen selectively. I smiled when a father touched his son's knee just as I said those words. If you've been a parent, you know how it works. You can whisper from the far end of the house, "Would you like to use the car tonight?" And even with the stereo booming, they never fail to hear. But you can shout repeatedly in a house that's deathly still that the lawn needs mowing, and the targeted ears are all deaf. But those of us who are parents also know that the children might, in truth, say the same about us. Parents are not always good listeners. I'm sure there must have been times when one of my kids wanted to do what still another Shakespeare character does when he boxes the ears of a man playing deaf and says, "This cuff was but to knock at your ear and beseech listening." How exasperated we get sometimes, knowing people aren't paying attention, and how lonely sometimes, not just to hear the perfunctory grunt that says, "Yes, there's a live body in the room," but a response that says, "I'm really paying attention and trying to understand." I think listening like that is implied in the Simon and Garfunkel hit that led the top 10 for so long. The lyrics of a song never read particularly well because they were planned for a different medium. But here are some of the promises which, along with a haunting melody, made that song so popular. "When times get rough and friends just can't be found, like a bridge over troubled waters, I will lay me down. When you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I'll take your part when darkness comes and pain is all around. Like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down." That could be a wedding song about what a man may be to his wife, or she to him, or a promise from a parent to a child, or an essay on friendship, or a hymn describing the way Jesus related to other people. "Like a bridge over troubled water." There are not many lovelier definitions in the world of what one person may be to another. It has the flavor of something theologian Paul Tillich said in one of his published sermons: "Everyone is potentially a tool of healing for someone else." It's a little frightening to hear that, I suppose, but exciting, too, to realize that we have that kind of power, and sad to think how seldom we use it. One of the most common reasons for that failure can be summed up in the phrase deliberate deafness, the disease of not listening. You know the old adage, "None so deaf as those that will not hear." Because to the organically deaf, you can at least write a note and see comprehension dawn. But to the perfectly functioning ear of the person who will not listen, you simply bounce words off a thick, blank wall. I remind you again how often Jesus must have felt the pain of that, great teacher that he was, pleading, "They that have ears to hear, let them hear." He spoke metaphorically, as he so often did. They that have ears, in a literal sense, who didn't in that crowd? Every last one of them had those odd little structures on each side of their heads. But just as Gary reminded us a couple of weeks ago that when Jesus talked about seeing, he wasn't thinking about corneas and retinas, so here he isn't talking about eardrums and cochlear nerves. He means what Shakespeare's Antony meant 15 centuries later when he said, "Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. The metaphor means listen to me. I remember a line from an old movie called Midnight Cowboy, to which many in the audience related. Everybody's talking at me. No one hears a word I'm saying. There are lots of teenagers who have reason to feel that way, kids whose parents are too distracted to pay much attention to what their children say, and especially when both words and body language demand attention in order to know what's really being said. But the other sad side of that story is that more and more kids are listening less and less to their parents. Sociologists can give you several reasons for it, but one that particularly bothers me is the number of television shows in which parents are portrayed as hopeless dodos, too bumbling and out of touch to be worth hearing. You know, courtesy and respect do not come naturally, like weight gain and body height. They have to be taught. And when they're not, when in a popular medium disrespect is taught instead, a generation grows up that's rude to parents at home, to teachers in school, and to customers in the businesses you own. It's even sadder, but not at all uncommon, when husbands and wives no longer show enough respect to listen to one another. All sorts of problems are blamed for broken homes, but many of them are probably just substitutes for the loneliness that comes when nobody is getting through to anybody. I stood in line one night to see a movie while Billy went on into the lobby because it was cold outside. I had nothing else to do, so I became aware of the pair right in front of me. The man was a grump who did nothing while we were in that line except stare stolidly off across the street. I don't know where he wished he could be, but it was obviously not there. I could tell it was very different for his wife, who seemed quite happy to be out of the house and with an adult, and she was trying with all her might to interest her husband in conversation. He didn't respond, except in an occasional "mm." He didn't look at her or smile when she smiled or see anything or feel anything. And I thought, lady, I'll bet you'd even appreciate a good fight right now. At least he'd know you were alive. And I would guess that many fights at home start for exactly the same reason. And I thought maybe if you'd call him an ugly name, he'd be shocked into noticing that you were standing right there beside him. There was troubled water between those two, and what they needed above all else was a bridge of real listening. It's ironic, isn't it, that we start dating and courting and getting engaged because we find someone we love to talk to, someone we enjoy hearing talk, and then we get married, and somebody, or both somebodies, just gradually stop listening. Because we really need someone to talk to, sometimes like a physical craving. I remember an old Italian in one of Robert Browning's poems called The Ring in the Book, if it matters, and I think it doesn't, who is considering leaving Rome and moving out into the country, where he says, the air is good, firewood is cheap, and the wine is pure. But there would be another need. He knew that. And he puts it this way. I will have two or three old friends will grope their way along the mere half mile of road with staff and lantern on a moonless night when one needs talk. Old friends who come when one needs talk. How desperately we all need that at times. Isn't that why, if we are good friends, we sometimes call each other on the telephone and say, "Hey, come over and let's just sit and talk." So the big question is, why, if it's so important, do we forget how to listen? Remember those words from Scripture that Leon read this morning? And how Martha was upset because her sister Mary chose to visit with Jesus instead of helping her with the household chores. If I put what Jesus said to her in modern language, it would run something like this. "For Pete's sake, Martha, stop running around and sit down and listen. Forget the dust and the dishes for a moment. Stop worrying over whether the wine is cool. We have things to talk about." There are some good things to say about efficiency, but when it's time to listen, when the signal comes through loud and clear that somebody really wants to talk and wants to be heard, then you drop the broom or the newspaper and you listen. Because if you don't, you never can be positive that there'll be another chance. Unless you call that man in Los Angeles who advertises that he is available as a professional listener. He offers no advice, promises no solution to problems, boasts no special university training. He simply charges by the hour to sit and listen to whatever his clients want to get off their chests. I understand he makes a decent living. Now, I don't mean, of course, that we have to be intense all the time. A lot of conversation is desultory. As one man put it, it's chattering with other chattering people about other people's chatter. If you hear that with half an ear, it won't matter. But you watch for the moment when someone is trying to get beyond saying, "Thank you," or "Yes, it does look like rain," and is trying to say, "If I tell you how I feel, will you laugh? Will you hear only half of it before you start preaching to me? Will you take it seriously and then tell me what you really and truly think about it?" There's a little book called Creative Broodings, which has in it an actual letter written by a boy who had run away from home, written back to his parents. And yes, it has the predictable touch of self-pity. But if you forgive that and listen, I think the letter says something worth hearing. "Do you remember, Mom and Dad, when I was about 6 or 7 and I used to want you to just listen to me? I remember all the nice things you gave me for Christmas and for my birthday, and I was really happy with the things about a week at the time I got them, but the rest of the time during the year, I really didn't want presents. I just wanted all the time for you to listen to me like I was somebody who felt things too, because I remember even when I was young, I felt things. But you said you were busy. Mom, you're a wonderful cook, and you had everything so clean, and you were so tired so much from doing all those things that made you busy. But you know something? I would have liked crackers and peanut butter just as well if you had only sat down with me a while during the day and said to me, 'Tell me all about it so I can maybe help you understand.' I think that all the kids who are doing so many things that grown-ups are tearing out their hair worrying about are really looking for somebody that will have time to listen a few minutes and who really and truly will treat them as they would a grown-up who might be useful to them, you know, polite to them. If you two had ever said to me, "Pardon me," when you interrupted me, I'd have dropped dead. If anybody asks you where I am, tell them I've gone looking for somebody with time, because I've got a lot of things I want to talk about. Love to all, your son. Well, there are always two sides. Parents dying to listen, and kids who won't talk. But the letter speaks truth about the other side. Parents so busy working to give their kids all the advantages that they have no time to lend an ear as proof that the children are so deeply loved that even what they have to say is important. If you aren't a parent yet, and the letter I read doesn't strike a responsive chord at all, it might be better to have no children. But even then, there'd always be other people needing someone to listen, wouldn't there? So there's no way around it. If you haven't learned to be a good listener, you are constantly cheating someone. Last week, I mentioned the little book called Tuesdays with Maury, in which the old professor's ex-student, Mitch Albom, writes of what he learned of life by going every Tuesday to visit his dying teacher. He says, "When Maury was with you, he was really with you. He looked you straight in the eye, and he listened as if you were the only person in the world." Mitch, who had been Maury's student at Brandeis University, says he had scoffed back in those days at the importance of such listening, hardly a lesson for a university course. Learning to pay attention? How important could that be? I now know it's more important than almost everything they taught us in college. In funny old Falstaff's unconsciously profound words, it really is the disease of not listening that we are troubled withal. So no matter who we are or what we do, we should never make the excuse that we have no ministry, nothing to give in those critical times when people close to us need to be heard. We have ears for listening.